Hey guys, what's up? The Combo back in business for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. I'm Norm along with Mike. Of course, the Leafs Combo supported by Oak Ridge Ford in London, Ontario, oakridgeford.com. Ford employee pricing wraps up on September 30th. You have like 6 days left, huge money off, low interest rates. Don't have too much of an inventory right now, but there may be a vehicle for you. Get at me through the YouTube channel, or you can get at me on Twitter at I am Norman James. Mr. Augello, I want to get started with a bit of a recount, so to speak, on our latest poll in community. Should the Leafs seriously pursue Pietrangelo? 184 votes, great participation. 57% of respondents, the OGs in conference, say yes, seriously go after this guy. 43% say no. Not quite emphatic, but there is a belief the Leafs need help on the defensive end of things, and Pietrangelo could be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, that, I think that reflects, you know, where Leaf Nation is at. I think most people see, I mean, I've heard, you know, a number of the insiders like Renaud Lavoie, TVA Sports, or Pierre LeBrun, or Elliot Friedman, that have echoed, you know, essentially, if Pietrangelo reaches free agency on October 9th, the Leafs will be in on it. The question then is, you know, what do they do? Because they don't have enough cap space right now to be able to sign him, but they can create the cap space by, you know, moving out somebody. But that's, you see, that is the question. And that's where I go. I think they're interested in him. I think they would go after him. I think there's a possibility that he would come to Toronto. But there are other teams that are in better cap position, like Calgary, like Colorado, if they got into it, Florida, if they, you know, if they pull off this Mike Matheson for Hornquist deal, that they would open, that they would have about the same amount of cap space, but they would need a defenseman, so they might be in on Pietrangelo. But and Vegas would be in the same boat as the Leafs, so you know it's possible. And if he wants to come to Toronto, you know, that makes all the difference in the world. I wrote yesterday about, you know, a few years ago, Steven Stamkos really didn't want to come to Toronto. They, you know, they laid open the door for him. They had the mayor of Toronto and the CEO of Canadian Tire and made him an offer to be the highest paid player at the time in the NHL. And he decided to go back to Tampa, and that was his right. John Tavares, they didn't offer him the highest salary in the NHL. He just wanted to come back to Toronto, and he took $2 million less than what San Jose offered him to come back to the Leafs. So it's really up to Pietrangelo and what he wants to do. I think ideally he wants to go back to St. Louis, but it doesn't seem like St. Louis is willing to do what they need to do to keep him there. So I think the Leafs are in on him if he hits the open market, and I think he would be possibly amenable to coming to Toronto, but it's all a question of what the Leafs have to do after that. And I'm gonna write about this today on Hockey Buzz. The one thing that I think people have to worry about is, sure, the Leafs want to bring in a number one defenseman like Pietrangelo, but they cannot do that and keep the core group together. Mm-hmm. You have to make the decision, whether it be to trade Marner or to trade Nylander. It's an either or. You have to move someone off that core four group to reallocate funds towards your defense. Otherwise, you risk being a team like Tampa after they won the cup in 2004, when they were so front-loaded or top-heavy with LeCavalier, Saint-Louis, Brad Richards, and Dan Boyle, that they had no money to be able to have a support structure or secondary offense on their third and fourth lines, or even the money to keep, I think it was Nikolai Hattie-Boulin as their goaltender. Basically all the pressure would be on Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, Morgan Rielly, and Pietrangelo to perform at a top level every night. And if they don't, you lose. And that's not a winning formula. So you can't keep everybody that you have right now and add Pietrangelo. You have to make a choice.
Everything comes down to money, Michael. Petrangelo's at that age. He's got a Stanley Cup. He'd go to Magnitogorsk if they paid him the most money. Let's be honest here. You know that. This is the Leafs Combo for Oak Ridge Ford. Norm along with Mike. Just a quickie. Thank you very much for your participation, especially on the YouTube channel. Tons of discussion going on, spawned from our previous convo on Sunday, wondering about the Leafs aiming for Alex, and of course how that plays into what the Leafs need to do with the current setup, which of the core forwards needs to go. Many believe it's Marner, thinking that he's making too much, not producing to value, never will, and that with the way the salary is structured, the bonus inclusion, you can move Marner. Others think that William Nylander's the ideal guy to be sent away. And of course, it devolves into Marner versus Nylander. And I suppose, Mike, we're guilty of igniting that player versus player debate. As long as it doesn't get personal, something that we have to discuss, it would be nice if all of these guys could just play their positions, contribute to the greater good, have the Leafs add who they need to add, and this team finally wins an effing Stanley Cup after however many years it's been. But I'm not sure we can ever have any kind of peace internally, Mike.
You stated it. The contract situations with both, they pose different positives or different problems depending on your perspective. Marner, the base salary on his contract is less than $1 million throughout. So that you're talking about signing bonus anywhere from, you know, 7 to 14 million over the life of this. I think it was a 6-year deal. So, you know, if you trade him now, he's already been paid his signing bonus for the upcoming season, because that was due to players on July 1st. You know, then the team is basically getting a Mitch Marner who could be their leading scorer for less than $1 million for this year, but the cap hit is, you know, a little under 11 million. Nylander, the first 2 years were heavy signing bonus and they were front loaded. So his cap hit of 6.9 something million, his money, real money, is less than that. So for teams out there, like for a team out there, let's say like New Jersey or Ottawa or Detroit that has boatloads of cap space, the cap number really is meaningless. It's the what money has to be paid out. And especially with somebody like Eugene Melnyk in Ottawa, the money is extremely important because he doesn't have any. So, I mean, so either one is movable. It's a question of which one do you get the most value for? And I'm not going to, everybody knows where I stand on this, but you know, it's up for debate, but I think one of them, because if you decide with the Leafs with $6 million, a little over $6 million in cap space, if you decide that the solution for adding Petrangelo is to trade Freddie Anderson, is to trade Alex Kerfoot or Andreas Janssen and maybe clear another salary. Okay, you can do that. You have to bring in a cheaper goaltender. Mm-hmm. You have to add players to replace the other players. And you have to not severely decrease the quality overall of your team. I don't know how that's possible, because it's easier said than done to replace Freddie Anderson with a cheaper goaltender. Who? Because I don't know if you're going to find a goaltender for $2 or $2.5 million who can equal the amount of games played and the quality of Freddie Anderson mm-hmm. next year. And the same thing goes with Janssen, who was hurt for most of the year, but you know, he yep. can score 20 goals and is an effective winger. So, I mean, it's easier said than done to go down that road.
Kyle Dubas had the guts to chase William Nylander all over Europe and ultimately capitulate to his demands. He had the guts to go all in on Mitch Marner when the fan base was advising him to be cautious. He had the guts to go all in on John Tavares to make Austin Matthews a franchise player. Does he have the guts to reverse course and perhaps right his wrongs, to make up for his mistakes, to change things? Does he have the guts, Mike? That's this really comes down to what he wants to do. We can yell, scream, ham and haw all we want. It boils down to Kyle Dubas making a decision whether to retract his moves, do things that he probably didn't want to set out to do in the beginning, or just stay the course. You have your big four. I mean, these guys will carry the day most of the time. Everybody else is a bit of a contributor. Let some of the younger defensemen season on the back end. And hopefully this thing comes together before the stars on the team become geriatrics. Double down on the direction that the team is headed with the players you have and the setup that you've created, or hit the brakes, move somebody out, get a big defenseman, try it that way.
See, that's the thing. I think Dubas is not a closed-minded person. I think he's somebody who he believes what he believes in, but I also think he believes in empirical evidence. So when you see a team fail for the same reason for 4 years in a row, I think you learn your lesson. I don't think he's a zealot. I think he is a smart manager and realizes that, and the indications are from all the insiders out there and from, you know, just common sense, that this team will not go far unless they upgrade their blue line. And that is the focus of Leafs management this offseason, whether it be trading for Matt Dumba or trading for Aaron Ekblad if he's available, or going in free agency for Alex Pietrangelo or other defensemen. That's the direction that they're going. It's just a question of, you know, what with their limitations in terms of their salary structure, what can they do? So I don't think they're locked into a particular position now. I mean, the one thing that's been clear from what's been mentioned over the last month or so is ideally he doesn't want to break up the core four because he's got a cost certainty there. You know, and if for one season, like if he can go out and acquire a player on long-term injury, like a Ryan Kessler or a Marian Hossa or Marian Gaborik, to open up more than just the $81.5 million, to go into LTIR, you know, to add Pietrangelo and keep the group and still be able to add players to help, you know, through the season, then maybe that's the way that they go. But it's not sustainable if they sign a big ticket free agent or if they add a big salary defenseman that they can keep that group. So at some point, either this offseason or next season, Kyle Dubas will have to make a choice between one of those players and improving their defense, because it's not going to happen just by osmosis. It's not going to happen where, you know, all of a sudden Rasmus Sandin is going to be a 25-minute top pairing defenseman. He may eventually do that, but it's going to take a couple, three, 4 years.
Dialing back real quick, Mike, what was Kyle Dubas thinking when he committed to Nylander, to Marner, obviously signing Tavares before that, and obviously re-upping Austin Matthews? What was the idea there? Where was he thinking all of this would come together? How did he think those top four guys would be supported? And where did he think this team would be around now?
Obviously, with the young defenseman that they have in the pipeline, you know, Dermott, who's just coming off his entry-level deal, you know, Liljegren and Sandin, they were hoping for growth internally. But they were all, he was also depending on, and a lot of managers with a lot of teams were, depending on the growth of the salary cap with the new U.S. television deal, with a number of other factors, they were expecting it to grow from 81.5 to probably close to 90 million over the next couple of years. And with that growth of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 million, that would be the area that they could add defensive help if they needed it. Well, that's not going to happen now because of the pandemic and because of, you know, everything that's happened. 81.5 is probably going to be the cap for the next 2 or 3 years. And not only the Leafs, but teams like Tampa and other teams are going to be in, you know, in a scramble mode to be able to, you know, fit what they have under 81.5. The one benefit with the Leafs is they will spend to the cap because they're a financial juggernaut, whereas other teams, you know, the cap ceiling is 81.5, but their internal budgets will be less than that. So you're going to have a lot of teams with limitations, but a lot of them are, their limitations will
be less
than that.
Money's got to be tighter post-COVID too, Mike. So let's not forget how the financial disaster of the last 6 months is going to impact the way these teams lay out their finances in the months and seasons to come. And even the mighty Maple Leafs are included in that group. Will Robinson and community responding to our question, should the Leafs seriously pursue Alex Pietrangelo? Yes, but only if he really wants to be here. He's a Toronto guy. Doesn't he want to come home? John Howard, only if it doesn't stop the Leafs from acquiring other players that are available. William Bryant, it's going to cost Nylander anyway, so trade him to Carolina, who wants him anyway. I think Mr. Bryant is from Carolina. So, William, thanks for listening. And who knows, maybe he ends up playing with his buddy Sebastian Aho, Murray Lindsay. No cap room, plus Dubas overpays and doesn't set boundaries. Christopher Murphy, yes, I'd throw Nylander on the bait hook, no question. M. White, if they can get him at 8 mil, I think it's worth shuffling the deck a little bit. Black Wolf, 073, if he signs for 9 mil or less. What's his name? F987. I'm curious as to why over 50% of Leaf fans think Pietrangelo would be a good acquisition. Masit Aktas, dump 88, get Petro.
Well, I mean, the one response is, I don't know why, you know, 60% of Leaf fans think that, you know, he would be an improvement. Well, he's one of the top five defensemen in the NHL. Mm-hmm. That's why. Because, you know, if you look at the 23 defensemen that got votes for the Norris Trophy this year, you know how many Leaf defensemen got? Zero. I mean, Morgan Rielly was injured. And we know he's a top defenseman, but it's illustrated by the fact that nobody, not Jake Muzzin, not Rielly, not Tyson Barrie or Cody Ceci, no one got a vote. You do not win in this league unless your yep. defense is at least above average, and the Leafs' defense is below
average.
Who
was the
average.
Last stalwart blue liner, bona fide superstar defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Wow.
Or Salming. I mean, do you consider Thomas Cabrera or Brian McCann? Yeah. I mean, I think they were good defensemen, don't get me wrong, but were they mm-hmm. number one defensemen? No, neither one of them were. It's Boreas Salming. You're talking about early 1980s. You're talking almost, you know, talking 35 to 40 years since they've had, you know, a defenseman who was a legitimate Norris Trophy candidate. You know, Rielly was last year. He had 72 points, but no, it's Boreas
Salming.
How
does he not look amazing on that blue line? How does he not help transform that blue line and add some consistency to the star factor from the net through the forward core? I just don't see how he doesn't improve this team exponentially. Mike, couple of things real quick. Mm-hmm. Tampa up 2-1 on the Stars in the Stanley Cup final. I've got the Bolts to win the cup, but you know Dallas, I don't think they're going to go away anytime soon.
No, it was a bad game and a bad strategy yesterday for Dallas. I think that, you know, they're getting maybe caught up too much in the physical battle here. But I actually think, even though everybody was lauding the decision and he scored a goal, Norm, I personally believe that it was a mistake for Tampa Bay to put Stamkos in there at less than 100%. I mean, I don't think he was going to be 100% for the remainder of the series. And maybe you bring him in late in the series as an emotional rallying point, because he clearly is not healthy. You know, he scored a goal. It was emotional. He was on the bench. But after the first period, I don't believe he played a shift. And if the rumors are true that he has to work through some things physically, I think he's done for the series. And now that arrow in John Cooper's quiver is gone. And yes, they're up in the series. And if they carry forth and win the series, you know, okay, maybe that was a risk worth taking. But now I think he's done for the series. And now you have to forge forth without him. And if they lose the series, then maybe that was a big mistake by Cooper.
Tampa and Dallas, Mike, two teams I'd like to see the Leafs become, obviously one of, the way they're constructed, a little easier to emulate what Tampa's doing. Give it up to Dallas. Sleepy, quiet, they get the job done. Who knows, could end up Stanley Cup champions. And Kyle Dubas and the Leafs and Leafs Nation and the Leafs Convo and the OGs and the Converts all dodged a bullet by Steve Stamkos choosing to go back to Tampa, and the next year John Tavares coming to join the Maple Brothers. Cal Morale reminds us that the Blue Jays' magic number to fill out the American League group of eight for the playoffs is one. The Yankees are already in. I think they're going to do it against the Yankees this evening. Mike, the Jays and the Yankees, thanks to baseball's expanded playoff structure, both in the playoffs. Amazing.
Yeah, but
Yeah, well, but
But yeah, I'll bet. I mean, I think the Yankees have a legitimate chance to win the World Series now that they've got all their injured players back. And
Oh my gosh.
I give the Blue Jays credit for making an expanded playoff. But I'm sorry, their rotation other than Ryu is a bunch.
Sure. And
And so it's a Pyrrhic victory. Yes, you make the playoffs. You're one of the top eight in the American League. And if losing to Tampa Bay or losing to whoever else is high if that's your goal,
Mike,
then fine.
for years to come, the Blue Jays are going to be a real pain in the ass to pitch to. You know
Oh,
that.
no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. And they're playing in a bandbox ballpark in Buffalo, and that helps
Yeah.
out guys like Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio, lesser than Guerrero. I don't think he's had a pretty good year.
You're disparaging the ballpark that you have grown up around, for God's sake.
It's a triple-A ballpark. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah, and it's unfortunate that they can't come to Canada, but circumstances dictate. So, look,
That's
you
true.
have a good night, okay? Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Norm.